You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
Thursday, 25 July, local PPI due this morning, expected 4.6%. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb Global Headquarters in Johannesburg, South Africa. On the show today, Odwa Mugwenchu, Tribe South Africa. We'll look at Baldwin moving into the rental model, as well as doing sales and the Vodacom update for Q1 ending June. Sylvester Kobo, he's a fixed income at Stanlib. Multi-asset income funds, what are they and how are they different? And then Benay Sega from Debt Busters, their third annual Money Stress Survey, Women and Youth Under Most Pressure. The show is brought to you by Stanlib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. Morning headlines. MoneyWeb SA may battle to sustain inflation near 4.5%. This according to Stanlib. Cost of key services such as electricity and water have exceeded inflation for several years. Business Day, SA mounts bid to hang on to its AGOA trade benefit. Pretoria-Washington relationships have been deteriorating for years. Morning markets, red. S&P down 2.3%, NASDAQ off 3.7%. Easter's red, Sydney down a tenth, Tokyo down 0.2%, Hong Kong down 1.3%, and Tencent down 2.25%. Commodities, red. Gold, 2,419. Brent, 8,108. Platinum, 948. Palladium, 900. The Rand is 18.41. Bitcoin, 64,250. And top 40 opening call, about 350 points, 0.5% to the red.
MoneyWeb Now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Tony and I are with Odwa Mugwenchu from Tribe South Africa. Odwa, I appreciate the early morning. An update from Baldwin yesterday morning, talking around how they're going to be developing apartments for rental over the next 8 to 10 years, using up a fair big chunk of their land bank. I can't decide if this is deeply cunning or if this just shows the troubles they have in literally just selling the apartments, because that would certainly, I would imagine, be the better solution or the one they would prefer. Your take on the update? It's a stock that's had a tough couple of years share price wise.
100%. So, I mean, in short, I think that it's a good move in terms of diversification of the business. If you look at their previous financials, they did suffer quite a bit in the original model of building to sell. And with pressures currently on consumers and the like, it makes sense to want to move away from that model and perhaps have some more consistent income coming in through the rental business. And then if things pick up for the consumer and they're able to purchase more, then the build to sell model comes in again. So that's what my thought is on the matter.
I get your point in that. Some flexibility. And I imagine the units that they are renting, if we suddenly see massive demand coming back for purchasing units, and I mean, I suppose it happens at some point, rates come down, inflation comes down, then they can even sell those rental units. It's not a hard swing. They've got that flexibility.
Correct. Yes. I mean, that's the whole thing. It's to build more diversity into the books of the business. And if it does build to that, they can sell at a later stage.
Vodacom update. This is for the first quarter. Group revenue up 1.5%. Egypt doing well. Financial services revenue up nicely, but it's still only about 10% of the business. Telcos are having a tough time of it. When I look at the chart of Vodacom, I look at the chart of MTN, neither of them are looking terribly exciting. This update seemed a bit ho-hum.
Yes, it wasn't shooting out the lights. However, I did see some great prospects on the business. As you said, the Egypt side of things, it does look like that business is growing quite aggressively. M-Pesa also doing quite well, processing over $400 billion over a year. So, I mean, they are diversifying quite well. They were also waiting for the merger and acquisition from Maziv. For currently with a competition tribunal. So, I mean, I think that once everything lines up again, the business must come back up. And I like that the strategy now is also looking more towards the financial services as instead of data and mobile.
Financial services, absolutely. I mean, you know, there's bank school all these days, but you can see the logic behind it. It certainly works in the mobile space. I suppose, and I said there, it's small. It's about 10%, but it is growing ahead of all the other revenue. And to your point, if they can really crack this market, much like Bourne, I suppose, it gives them an extra revenue stream.
100%. And I think, I mean, if you look at also the countries in which Vodacom is focusing on, it's mainly African countries. Mm-hmm. And, you know, banks haven't really infiltrated the African region just yet. And many transactions do come from cell phones at the moment. And that's why I think that's going to be a winner for them eventually.
That's a great point. Over the rest of the continent, there's probably a lot less banked than there is in more developed markets. And truthfully, even in South Africa, we'll leave it there. Odwa McGuinchu, Tribe South Africa, appreciate the early morning time. And our poll today on LinkedIn and Twitter is around that Vodacom. I mean, as I said, group revenue, 1.5% up for the first quarter, modest. But do you hold the stock? Perhaps you prefer MTN. Perhaps for you, it's thanks but no telcos at all. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter.
Your money knows that reaching new heights means turbulence. But what if you don't have to feel it? Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to a broad range of global strategies. So when you invest in StanLib's Global Multi-Strategy Diversified Growth Fund, your money can withstand the ups and downs caused by market fluctuations. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. StanLib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
I'm chatting with Sylvester Kober, Deputy Head of Fixed Income at StanLib. Sylvester, I appreciate the time today. I think many of us understand traditional income and bond funds, but multi-asset income funds, how are they different to the more traditional income and bond funds, and what are they trying to deliver for investors?
Thanks, Simon. So within the fixed income space, these funds are designed to provide investors with better returns than money market and traditional income funds while mitigating the risk of capital losses associated with bond funds. So these funds can invest in all income-generating assets, both locally and offshore. And the aim here is typically to protect clients' capital while at the same time generating returns of inflation plus 3% consistently.
Gotcha. And that flexibility of asset allocation must be a significant benefit over longer periods of time and, of course, different market cycles.
Yes, correct. I mean, you know, over the past 4 to 5 years, markets have been quite volatile. Mm-hmm. You know, we've been subjected to COVID, the breakout of wars and major spikes in inflation, both up and down. And it's been really tough for investors to decide where best to invest in an environment like that. So the biggest benefit of multi-asset income funds within the fixed income space is that they give the fund manager flexibility to really shift asset allocation based on the prevailing market conditions on behalf of the clients. So the fund manager will decide when it's the right time to hide in cash and when to dial up the risk in the portfolio by, say, buy bonds or even property for that matter, mm-hmm. and when it's the right time to go offshore or even repatriate the cash. That way, we as fund managers ensure that returns are consistent over time and clients are shielded from these bouts of volatility.
Gotcha. In essence, you're doing the heavy lifting for me because that's your skill set, not my skill set, and I don't have to make those decisions.
Yeah.
If we look at fixed income investments, obviously linked to interest rates, cycles, I mean, even market events can have a do. And you mentioned that we've had high interest rates, expectations that rates will start to move down. We don't know when, but certainly it looks like next moves are down. How do you and your team sort of, in these different cycles, what risks are you sort of looking out for?
So typically when interest rates are moving up, we tend to shield investors by investing in those instruments that will reset higher as rates move up, mm-hmm. and also in short duration assets to protect, you know, the capital. And now that our view is we are at the top of interest rate cycle, like you say, both locally and globally, we tend to put on more risk on the portfolios. One, you know, to capture and lock in the high yields mm-hmm. that the current environment offers. And secondly, you know, for our clients to benefit from the capital growth as interest rates move lower. And you're right. I mean, we certainly are set to see interest rate cuts. Our view is from the SARB, you know, we expect 2 cuts this year, starting in September, totaling 50 basis points, and then followed by 3 more next year. So it makes sense to lock in these high yields before they move lower.
And that's a key point you make there. If you're looking at the bond market, rates coming down and you're going to lock some of that in, does also see capital appreciation and hence lock in the high rate and get some capital appreciation. It's almost the sort of the double winner there.
Exactly.
If to summarize, I mean, if you and your colleagues were looking to invest in a multi-asset income fund, what sort of characteristics are you looking for in the fund? And I suppose, as importantly, in the management team?
So I would firstly look for a reputable manager, one that can demonstrate a track record of having managed this fund successfully over different market environments, which is important. And I would also make sure that they can fully utilize the flexibility that these funds afford the managers. You know, in these funds, you don't want a manager that will tell you we choose to take a long-term view and ignore what's happening now. Because as we've seen in the last 4 to 5 years, a stale approach to markets can really cost clients or investors money. So in these funds, it's of great benefit to be agile and flexible as a manager.
I take your point, and you mentioned the different market environments, and you've mentioned twice the last couple of years. We've absolutely seen it all. We saw the depth of the pandemic, incredibly low interest rates. Then, of course, the massive rush up inflation and our rates coming, as we say, at some point back down. We have seen what could be a generation of market cycles pretty much put into the last couple of years.
100%, yeah. It's challenging time for investors to really keep up. But the benefit, I guess, is in having the right manager that can make those calls for you to do the heavy lifting, as you were saying earlier.
Yeah, 100%. Leave me to do what I do best and leave the managers to the skills of knowing what, where and how. Sylvester Kobo, Deputy Head Fixed Income, Stanlib, appreciate the time.
Your money can do more when it's investing with conviction. Our partnership with JP Morgan Asset Management gives you access to in-depth, broad market research and high-return investment strategies. So invest in a select set of companies with long-term structural growth potential with Stanlib's Global Growth Fund. Seek more returns at stanlib.com/more. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider.
MoneyWeb now, on the money.
Chatting now with Binay Sega, Executive Head, Debt Busters. Binay, appreciate the early morning time. Your third annual money stress survey, some 26-odd thousand respondents. And I suppose, I mean, the good news is that we are slightly better than we were in 2023. The bad news is that 75% of respondents are experiencing financial stress. And it is, I mean, it is severe stress as per the data that you've got.
Yeah, thank you, Simon, for having me on the show. You're absolutely right. It's things are better than they were last year, so that's the good news. And I think we should also put it into context of your previous conversation. It's been a hard number of years.
Yeah.
So it's not just coming on the back end of it. Any relief is very much welcome. So that is, I think, it's good, it's the good news. And that is, from a Debt Busters perspective, that is consistent with what we had seen on debt counseling side of the business. Here, the respondents were basically asked a number of questions during the month of June, predominantly. And I think we also did it last year and the year before. So it's nice to compare to see where the needle has moved. I think it's mostly to highlight to us that women tend to feel this financial stress much more than men, consistent with previous years. We've also seen, I think, a bit of resistance, I would say, as people get older, in terms of a bit of resistance in terms of trying to seek, actively seek remedies to deal with the money stress. And that could be, again, coming on the, you know, having had so much financial stress over the last several years, it could be a bit of a fatigue syndrome. You know, we've been working with the psychologist, Andrea Kellerman, and we analyzed the results based on that. So I think there's quite a bit to unpack there.
I take your point. And I mean, the one point that really stuck out for me was that people just feel stuck. I mean, this is, you know, money is you know, a deeply emotional issue. We wish it wasn't, but it absolutely is. And people do just feel, I don't know, that they, I suppose, trapped in the debt and don't really know where to turn or how to turn. And that is emotionally draining.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think, you know, that response, I feel stuck. 29% of the people answered that as the primary reason why they haven't done something about money stress. But when you look at it from an age and income perspective, you see quite differences. For example, that reason was the number one reason cited by those earning less than 10,000 rand. And that is the bulk of, you know, the working population in South Africa. There are many millions of people in that bracket. And what that means to us is also putting two and two together. Already starting back in 2016, 2017, with the advent of debt relief or debt intervention bill, as it came to be known, in terms of writing off debt for lower income groups, there was already trepidation that subsequently was amplified by COVID, and many of those individuals who would be seeking loans to improve their situation, that was their number one choice, were shut out of the loan market. And that's still the case today in the sense that, you know, they're not really attractive prospects. In case if you look to NCR's most recent credit market monitor, it says that 70% of the credit applications were rejected. We don't know what that is for the different income groups, but I'm willing to bet money on it that it will be mostly lower income groups wanting to borrow money, because that is predominantly the way they know how to get out of the situation. And I think it just shows you we've got to go a long way in terms of educating particularly lower income earners about what are the options available to them to deal with money stress.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and what, just over a third of respondents looking for a better job or pay. I mean, that seems like an easy solution, but this is not an easy job market. And some 39% trying to cut back on the monthly spend. I suppose the number there is down. It's down from 44% last year. But that is, to my sense, a way better solution than saying, let me go get another loan. It does give us a sense that there is some attempt to sort of get control of the situation to some degree.
Absolutely. I think you're spot on. I mean, compared to only 12% said they were looking for a loan, and as you say, 39% said you're trying to cut back on monthly spend. That is brilliant, you know, in terms of relatively speaking. And of course, it's great that people are looking for opportunities, you know, in terms of improving their lot. And we see that particularly with younger users. And I think on the point of trying to cut back on monthly spend, I want to say to the people also, like, we've been doing the survey for 3 years. That is consistently the number one reason or number one remedy people have mentioned. And we've been working in the background to actually enable something. Later this year, we're hoping to launch something called the Money Savers that it will allow individuals to subscribers to pay a little bit for everyday expenses and items, but save a lot. So I think it's quite a crucial thing, this savings and spending less but getting the same value culture. We really hope that it's going to take hold, particularly with younger users, which are predominantly the user base that we have for this and in terms of our online tools.
The one sort of, I suppose, a good news bit from it, low inflation, reduced load shedding concerns are down. And this does make sense and ease the pressure. And if we think to this time next year, hopefully there's even less load shedding and inflation's lower and maybe even rates are lower. There is maybe a light at the tunnel and certainly, or maybe it's just relieving some of that pressure, but there is hope.
Absolutely. And I think the way we have to see it is you are the professional, you know, it's all about confidence, you know, how we feel about the future and how we spend and how we make decisions. It's all about how confident we feel that we're still going to have money coming in tomorrow. When people aren't feeling it, they feel like, ooh, I don't know what inflation is going to do. I don't know what interest rates, which was also a big factor in last year's survey, are they going to go up again? If the load shedding is going to persist, all three of those driving factors from last year have subsided significantly. And, you know, we see a bit of confidence coming back. In a year's time, if things are stable, that will mean more confidence. And in fact, I would argue that we are going to make different, as a country, we're going to make on consumer basis different investment choices. And there will actually be money for individuals to go out and do things that will have much longer term payback, as opposed to worrying about what do you have to do in the short term to really make ends meet.
Yep, 100% on that. We'll leave it there. Spinner Sega Executive Head Debt Busters, appreciate the early morning time. That's it for today. I was chatting with Jimmy Moyoha yesterday. Kumba Iron Ore results, chunky dividend, reduced but still chunky. We asked if you were holding the stock. A third each said either no miners or watching but not yet holding. The rest split between yes, loving it, and no Transnet concerns. Have your vote, have your say, LinkedIn and Twitter. The show is brought to you by StanLib. Visit stanlib.com to get in touch with one of their investment specialists. Stanlib Asset Management is an authorized financial services provider. We're live every weekday morning, the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. podcast just after 7. Thanks to my team, Eddie, Nobokhle, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their time. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. If you're loving the show, please leave us a positive rating and a 5-star review in your podcatcher of choice. And we'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.